Welcome to episode 146 of Speaking of Mysteries. I'm Nancy Clare, and joining me today is Ashley Dyer, which is, in fact, the writing team of Margaret Murphy and Helen Pepper, to talk about their debut novel, Splinter in the Blood. As a reader, I have to say that this is a partnership forged in crime fiction heaven. Margaret Murphy has published mystery novels and short stories, many that have been nominated for and winners of awards. Margaret is the past chairperson of the Crime Writers Association in the UK. Helen is a professor of crime, as it were. She's a senior lecturer in policing at Teesside University and has been an analyst, forensic scientist, scene of crime officer, CSI, and crime scene manager. In her spare time, Helen is a judge for CWA's Gold Dagger for Nonfiction Award and a forensic consultant on productions, including Vera and Shetland, based on the novels by Anne Cleves. Here are Margaret Murphy and Helen Pepper, a.k.a. Ashley Dyer.
Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. I am really excited to have Ashley Dyer, which is, in truth, the writing team of Margaret Murphy and Helen Pepper, who have just released their debut novel, Splinter in the Blood. Thank you for joining me, Margaret and Helen.
We're delighted to be here, Nancy.
There are so many interesting aspects of Splinter in the Blood, but I have to ask you about your partnership. I'm particularly interested in writing partnerships. You're not the only one. But you're certainly the most recent. Can you tell me what prompted the two of you to decide to write together and how Ashley Dyer came to be?
Sure. This is Margaret speaking. The association with Helen, I suppose we've known each other for quite a long time because Helen has been conferences, crime writing conferences, for many years. And she's also been a consultant to Anne Cleves for a long time, and I knew her in that way. So when I decided to start writing this particular novel, and I knew there was going to be a very strong forensic element, I naturally wanted to bring Helen on board. I didn't want to upset Anne. I spoke to Anne Cleves because Anne obviously works with Helen for the Shetland series and for the Vera series. So I wanted to make sure that she wouldn't mind if I approached her. And she had no problem with that at all and thought that Helen might be interested.
And Helen, what's your brain feel about being half of this writing partnership?
Well, I absolutely love it because, as Margaret says, I've been working and consulting with writers for, it's got to be 20 years now. But usually it's someone contacts me and asks a specific question about a specific situation. I also work with TV script writers, and I tend to get more involved there. I help them at the story outlining stage and also, you know, coming up with ideas for them. And working with Margaret, it's a similar sort of idea, but just a lot more so. I'm a lot more involved in the planning and the plotting, so it's a lot more interesting for me.
And I guess this would be a good time for me to explain that both of you are steeped in crime. Margaret has published crime fiction, won awards, and is active in the Crime Writers Association in Great Britain. And Helen has taught policing at Teesdale University. You've been an analyst, a CSI, scene of crime officer, and crime scene manager, among many other things, in addition to your work as a consultant your work with Anne Cleves, who is, of course, you know, a favorite author of just about everybody I know. So you it's not like you just decided, okay, I'm going to be a crime scene consultant for TV. You know whereof you speak.
Yes, I think I've done my apprenticeship over the years.
The story takes place in Liverpool, and that's a city that, for most of us Americans especially, it seems to be frozen in sort of a mid-60s with the Beatles. And I was wondering why you if you could talk about why you chose Liverpool as a location for this novel.
I was actually born and brought up in Liverpool, and I quite understand that kind of frozen in time element. If you ask a lot of people, not only Americans, but people across the UK, mention Liverpool, they think the Beatles. And for a time, I think it went through a real slump during the 70s. I have an image of Liverpool during my teenage years of a very grey city. And it has changed drastically since 2008, made the European capital of culture in that year. And since then, there's been a lot of investment in the city. So it has this wonderful combination of extreme wealth and rather beautiful buildings, and also extreme poverty and all the crime that goes with that. So it makes for a very interesting setting, almost a character in the stories.
I think that's something I feel about UK cities, that many of them are so old that they can be characters. They have their own feeling, they have their own atmosphere.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true of Liverpool, and it is it's always been a very multicultural city because it was a major port. It still has some shipping. It's not the same as it used to be up to about the 60s when it started to decline. But you have that real vibrancy as an element there as well. Some people say Liverpool people have always got a chip on their shoulder, but there's also a very strong humour and a friendliness that it goes on the city as well, and a pride in the city.
And Helen, how did you feel about working in a Liverpool setting? I mean, I would assume that forensics are consistent throughout.
Well, yes, it's very consistent across the UK. But for me, well, CSIs, well, we're very inquisitive. We're very nosy people. We like poking around in other people's business. And I'd never actually been to Liverpool before I started working with Margaret. So my impression of the city was pretty much what you thought, you know, 1960s Beatles. But it's absolutely a fantastic city. You really should go there if you get a chance. It's a really sort of buzzing and happening place now. And the people are so friendly and so humorous and so witty that... Actually, I really don't mind going over there to work with Margaret. It's such good fun.
Well, I guess they'll just have to have a crime convention there, and that seems to be what brings me to a particular city.
We'll see what we can do, Nancy.
I want to talk about your two central characters in this book, and specifically Ruth Lake, who, as the book opens, has discovered her partner, Greg Carver, with a bullet in his chest and a gun by the side of his chair. And they both have lots of secrets. And not that there are any shortage of secrets in Splinter in the Blood. But without any spoilers, could you talk a little bit about, mostly about Ruth Lake, who is really a fascinating character?
Well, thank you. I'm really pleased you feel that way about her. I found her so as well, so much so that I'll tell you a little bit about how the story came to me. Stories come to me in a variety of ways, and this particular one, it was an image. I'm quite a visual person. So I had that image of a woman standing over a man who is shot, apparently dead at this point, and she's holding a gun in her hand. And it felt to me at that point that clearly she had a relationship with this man, because she looks at him and she feels, you know, a very complex mix of emotions. She feels contempt, and she feels compassion, and she feels regret. And those conflicting emotions don't come from someone that you chanced upon. There has to be something more to this relationship. And I didn't know what it was at that time. And I am an avid plotter and outliner. So it was a very scary place for me to be, not to know who this woman was, not to know why she was standing there with a gun in her hand. And then, just to make things more complex, she starts messing with the crime scene. Or who she was during that rather detailed outlining process. In fact, I'd written a one-page scenario, really, that's all it was, in 2014, and Helen came on board in 2016 when I started to write the story in earnest. So that's the point at which we started talking backwards and forwards, and we had a couple of meetings, and we had a lot of email conversations about what the situation was. How would this woman react in certain situations? Because it came out very early on in that she was a former CSI who was retrained as police. And that that mystery is also there in that choice. You know, why would a CSI change direction? And she was a very good CSI, very successful. Why would she change direction and become police? So I was working out those questions and talking to Helen about the possibilities right the way through the outlining stage.
And Helen, I'm wondering if this initial scenario that Margaret presented, I mean, I would think that initially your head exploded, and then you put it back together and said, no, this is what Ruth would do.
Well, yes and no, because Ruth, as a good CSI, would possibly do something absolutely different to Ruth, Greg Carver's friend and colleague. So, you know, it's very, very strange what she does, and that's part of the mystery of the story, and that's part of the secret that becomes clearer later.
And, of course, secrets just seem to compound. There are repercussions because Ruth does this. And I found it interesting that she has to deal with the repercussions of this act of trying to, shall we say, amend the scene of Greg Carver's apparent suicide attempt and the crime that they're both working on. And that crime, that the thorn killer, as this person is called, is about one of the creepiest things I've ever read. So thank you. Creepy in a wonderful way.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so pleased to hear that. And it's a thing that's always fascinated me. You know, tattoos in general, I am drawn to them, but I also have and the degree to which people are willing to mark their skins. The closest I can trace this back is to a meeting I had for the Crime Writers Association in London in 2010. And following on from that, I had a couple of hours before my train. There was an exhibition on at the Wellcome Trust, which is a huge foundation based in London. They have a huge display and lots of exhibitions that go on there. And this exhibition was called Skin. And it told the story, you know, what it does and the wonderful things that it can achieve, you know, how it keeps us safe and dry and warm and all the rest of it. But it also had a section on tattoos, and specifically a collection of tattoos that had been brought together by a very eccentric person in the 1800s. So there was actual samples of human skin, tattooed human skin on display. And that haunted me for years and years, and I think it was going to come out into a story. So we know by probably the end of chapter one that Carver has been investigating this thorn killer who tattoos the victims. And in the ink that the tattoo killer, the thorn killer uses, is a paralytic. So he slowly poisons the victims.
So, so creepy. And fabulous.
Can I just come in there?
Absolutely, Helen.
Because you've never actually met Margaret, but she's a very nice lady, and she's very petite and very smart and very sort of, you know, average and normal looking. And quite often, I'll look at her and think, how did that thought come out of that head? But also, where the ideas come from. Things like where she went to see the Skin exhibition. If I had a couple of hours in London, I'd think, ooh, somewhere nice for tea and cake. she thinks, let's go look at flayed skin for a couple of hours. You know, it's really, really difficult for her to comprehend sometimes.
Oh, well, you know, and thank goodness she does.
Yes.
So the other thing that really interested me about this, I mean, the thorn killer, the problem is, of course, we can't talk too much about the thorn killer without introducing any spoilers. It is very surprising, the course of events. I think that goes without saying. And the investigation takes Ruth because Greg is still recovering from this this gunshot wound. But that's what I wanted to ask you about, because a handgun is used in a crime at the beginning of the story with the shooting of Greg Carver. And I found this shocking for a mystery set in the UK. And I was wondering, this is something maybe Helen can talk about too. Can you talk about gun crime in England, specifically as part of a procedural? Poisoning, I get. Strangulation, I get. But a handgun crime in England was very unusual.
Yes, we do. We do have gun crime. We aren't nearly as good at it as you are.
Thanks.
But we do have gun crime. There are quite a lot of handguns in the UK that are very, very old, that were brought back as souvenirs after the Second World War and are still sitting in people's attics and things, and they do get into circulation. And despite our best efforts, we do have imports as well, firearms that are smuggled into the country. But for us, because they're a lot less available in the UK, we have criminal gangs who will lease out firearms to be used in crimes, and how much you pay is based on what sort of crime you're wanting to commit with it and whether or not the firearm will need to be disposed of afterwards. So we'll quite often have a series of crimes linked by a single firearm that's been loaned out to various different criminals. So it can get quite interesting like that as well.
Margaret, had you had gun crimes? I haven't read your previous novels. I'm sorry. Something I will remedy as soon as I can. But had you used a gun?
No, I hadn't. This was a first for me. And actually, I thought I'd painted myself into a corner, because when I started to really do the background research to this, it became quite clear to me that it would be really difficult for a person to get a legal gun and to use that in a crime, because Helen will be able to tell us which act was brought in to cover this. But at one point, handguns had to have adaptations on them, which effectively made them into small rifles. So it was very difficult to conceal on your person legally anything of that nature. And we had to do quite a bit of discussion, if I remember rightly, Helen, on how I could make that work in the story.
Yes, we had to work out how it could be readapted back into a firearm that would function as a firearm, but also you would be able to conceal and use as a handgun rather than something absolutely huge that you couldn't hide from people. But there are ways and means.
And, of course, that's what's frightening about you, Helen, is that you, not that you have, you might not have the macabre ideas, but you actually know how to execute them.
Well, yes. But I don't know. I think I'm with Tom Clancy on this one, when he was describing how to build a nuclear weapon in one of his books. You do put little faults in there, because you don't want it to be an instruction manual for anyone.
Thank you. you know, I was wondering, Helen, you've worked in the field. You're a CSI. You are so knowledgeable with forensics. And Margaret, you've been writing about this. Who influenced you? in their writings, whether it influenced you in the actual writing of the book or just people that you like to read. Obviously, Ann Cleaves. I mean, so who doesn't love Ann Cleaves? But aside from that, you know, whether it's Conan Doyle or, you know, who do you read?
Well, I think probably the earliest adult novelist that I was kind of involved and intensely engaged with that made me want to write was actually Charlotte Bronte. And she wrote a mystery, really, didn't she, in Jane Eyre? And it was those elements that I think drew me. But I think probably it goes to even before that, a lot of a kind of completely unsuitable material that I used to filch from my parents' bedside tables. So I read snippets of Chandler and snippets of Ed McBain. I think I was fascinated with noir. And in fact, the first story I ever wrote was 4 pages long, and I wrote it at the age of 10, and it was very hard-boiled, as I remember.
Helen, how about you? Do you read crime fiction, or do you feel you just have quite enough of it in your life? Thank you very much.
Well, to be honest, I don't read very much crime fiction. I read true crime, and I always have been a fan of true crime. I think my interest was sparked because when I was growing up, I grew up in West Yorkshire in the north of England, and from the ages of 11 to 16, we had a serial killer on the loose who was known as the Yorkshire Ripper, a chap called Peter Sutcliffe. And the fact that he was at large really impacted on my life. All my teenage years, you couldn't go out and do teenage things because, you know, the Ripper was there, so you had to be escorted everywhere, and it really cramped your style. But it really did spark an interest in me. So I've always been interested more in true crime. But now I'm a judge for the Crime Writers Association on their non-fiction award. So I now read all the non-fiction books that are submitted for that award. And I have to read a lot of academic texts as well for work. So I don't have an awful lot of time just for reading for fun. And when I do, I quite like to clear my brain out and read something like Harry Potter, you know, that's really not very taxing.
According to the press release that accompanied your book, Splinter in the Blood is the first in a series, and we'll get to read more about Ruth Lake and Greg Carver. Are you working on the next book, and what can you tell us about it?
We have just submitted the next with our agent, and hopefully we'll be with the publisher very, very soon. So it's following on from almost from the point where we leave this particular story, Splinter in the Blood. About 2 or 3 months on, Carver is beginning to recover. He's allowed back to work on a fairly restricted kind of access. He's not supposed to tax himself too much. He's given a review to do. If a crime hasn't been solved, if it's causing concern in the local populace, and in fact this one is, because it's causing all kinds of urban myths to grow up because young men are disappearing, then they will review the case and they will just make sure that nothing has been missed. So Carver is doing this review. He's doing it with Ruth Lake, and almost immediately it becomes clear that they do have a killer that they're seeking.
Which is good for us, right?
Well, I hope so. I hope you like it.
Well, I'm pretty sure I will. Helen and Margaret, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your debut novel, Splinter in the Blood, which is now available in the U.S. I'm looking forward to the next one. Do you have a title, or is it still a work in progress?
It's still a work in progress, as they often get changed, so not so far. But it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Nancy. We're really pleased to be here.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for having us.